Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, November 15, 2018. A Kenyan priest is murdered in South Sudan.
The investigation is ongoing. The details of the investigation are not yet disclosed. When they are disclosed, I think they will be dealt with the law.
And a member of South Sudan's National Youth Union accuses the government of interferences.
The National Youth Union and the National Chief Council in Juba have been making a lot of strikes in Juba, and this is not what the youth in the country has consented to.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Officials in Gok State say a known gunman killed a Kenyan priest on Wednesday night. The Gok State Information Minister says police have arrested three suspects in connection with the murder. For VOA News, Winnie Chirino has this report from Juba.
Father Luke Odor, the parish priest at Holy Family Cathedral Parish in Rumbek, worked closely with Father Victor Luke Odhiambo, who was murdered in his bedroom in the middle of the night. Father Odhiambo served as a director of a teacher's training center run by the Catholic Church in Kubet for the past 2 years. Doro says he received a phone call about 2:30 in the morning from Father Odhiambo's neighbors alerting him that something had gone terribly wrong.
What we heard last night when we are called, there are some men who came and entered to the compound, and then they entered to the room of the father, and one entered inside the room, and then the other, they were outside watching to see who is coming out. And then it was shot. And then the other who were sleeping, the priest and the teachers, they heard the sound of the gun. And then from there, they begin to cry and shout.
Father Dar says through a window, the neighbors say they watched gunmen leave the compound, and that's when they ran away. Dar says the slain priest taught him English while he was in the seminary training to become a priest. He says Father Odhiambo was kind, friendly and loving man who sacrificed a lot of his personal time to train teachers.
He loved people that the people should have a qualified knowledge. That's what he liked to give always to the people. And he liked always everyone to do good. He didn't want anyone to do a bad thing. He liked good thing also to be done. He liked people to go directly in the order, in the right way, in the right direction, in the right place always.
Gok State Information Minister John Maddell says security operatives arrested three men who admitted to the murder of Father Odhiambo. Security forces are interrogating others to try to understand the motive for the killing, according to Maddell.
The investigation is ongoing. The details of the investigation are not yet disclosed. When they are disclosed, I think they will be dealt with the law.
Maddell says two of the suspects have criminal records.
In 2016, one of them was arrested to have attacked a compound for missionaries in the area called Gangreal, which is bordering the Western Equatoria State. So, and this is the one again found to have involved in the second attack that took the life of Father. So one also came recently from Juba, he's a soldier by background, and he deserted and came back home, and then he involved himself in these criminal activities.
Maddell says state authorities will intensify efforts to disarm civilians. He says security operatives already collected 2,300 rifles from residents over the past week alone. The state has declared 3 days of official mourning for Father Odhiambo. This is the second incident involving a Kenyan cleric serving in South Sudan. Last year, Bishop Joel Mwenda of the Christ Ministry was killed in Juba for allegedly making noise. Bishop Mwenda was serving in Juba's Munuki suburb. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
A senior member of the South Sudan National Youth Union has resigned. Kelwel Agok announced his resignation yesterday, citing government interference in the activities of the union. AGOC claims the government of South Sudan is using the country's youth to stage demonstrations in Juba. He says the union is not active because of poor leadership style from its president.
So I have resigned from the National Youth Union as a member of the council, not as Secretary General of the Alliance.
Let me understand this correctly. The South Sudan National Youth Union, is this a government entity or what is it? Can you explain to us what it is?
In fact, the National Youth Union was formed earlier on in 2010. It wasn't functioning well until 2015, when we sat together. Other youth were brought from states and conduct national youth conventions in Juba, in which I myself and other members of the youth across the country were elected to the National Council. The current president of the National Youth Union was also elected to the seat.
Based on your explanation, this is basically a group that is aligned to the government. What is the work of this group?
And it's supposed to be independent, to elect, for the youth to elect their leadership and to operate independently. Had other independent bodies in the country, but that couldn't work out.
How would you react to some critics who say you are being used? Most of the demonstrations in Juba, pro-government demonstrations in Juba, you are on the streets chanting slogans that are prepared for you.
That's true. That's why I have resigned today. And I had never been on the moves that are being organized by the National Youth Union. The National Youth Union Council has never set, since it was elected into the office in 2015 up to now. And this is a clear indication that this is a dysfunctional National Youth Union. And that's why I had to resign, because people who know us may also assume being part of the mistakes that are going on. It is being controlled by the government, as you said, using it, poisoning threats to the youth in South Sudan.
I know that there are a lot of youth groups in South Sudan, the Anataban and the other civil society activists. There are so many there. What is the connection between this South Sudan National Youth Union and these other groups? Are they competitors? Are they working together, or do they hate each other?
In fact, they don't work together. And the Anataban was most members were from the National Youth Union. In fact, that had very serious threats from the leadership itself, of which some of them were members of the executives. And later they resign. All other civil society or youth civil society groups in the country or organizations, they are not working together with the National Youth Union because of the threats that they pose to the youth themselves.
We normally hear that the youth outfits in South Sudan are used by the government, but the government will distance itself, say, no, we don't control them. These are just people who operate by themselves. Is there any occasion where the government uses this national youth to, you know, advocate their agenda?
Yes, the National Youth Union and the National Chief Council in Juba have been making a lot of strikes in Juba. And in fact, their images are around the world in the international media outlets. So it is very clear, even from the 2016 to this year, 2018, they have been making all these guys in the names of the youth, and this is not what the youth in the country has consented to.
And now that you are out of the organization, do you see any future of any youth organization in South Sudan, independent youth organizations?
There is no future for the National Youth Union in Juba, and it will not protect the interest of the youth, and it is totally being destroyed by the government of South Sudan. And it wouldn't do anything for the youth in South Sudan. What they will do is to carry out continued divisions among the youth and threats to the youth. And many of the youth under that umbrella will go to exile and or otherwise will face many consequences.
That's Kelwela Gok, a former senior member of the South Sudan National Youth Union. He was speaking with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala, on Wednesday. The Netherlands has donated more than $9 million to the UN Development Programme to fund vocational training for young South Sudanese. The Dutch ambassador to South Sudan says the money will also be used to nurture an entrepreneurship culture among young South Sudanese. Wake Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
The $9.4 million donation will directly benefit some 6,000 youth and at least 100,000 others indirectly in the states of Jubek, Jonglei, Rumbek, Torit and Boudewey, according to Dutch Ambassador Janet Albada. The Dutch-funded project will also expand business and job opportunities for South Sudan youth by boosting the productivity of business and labor-focused local institutions. Ambassador Albada says the money will also be used to employ more youth in the agricultural and natural resources sectors of the economy. Albada says in order for the project to work, all parties that signed the revitalized peace agreement must adhere to the terms of the deal.
We need to focus on silencing of the guns. We need to focus on making sure that the political commitment of all the parties are going to stand and hold. But we also need to create peace dividends. And we particularly need to create and focus on the population of South Sudan to make sure that they feel that there's something changing in the country.
The project is expected to start next month and continue through the end of next year. Albada says the project is aligned with the South Sudan Partnership for Recovery and Resilience pillars of cooperation, including the commitment to restore productive capacity and close the skills gap of vulnerable women and youth. Albada says many state-run enterprises don't hire young people because they don't have the skills needed to do the work. Badagbu Daniel is governor of Boudewey State, one of the areas expected to benefit from the Dutch funds.
The moment we engage the young people into productive activities, we are creating conducive environment and stability for the country. Because these young people, they are being used by the warlords because they are not empowered. So when we see this grant being assigned today, the future of this country is becoming very brighter.
Matata Safi Kamis, managing director of the Hagna Agro-Processing Company, a South Sudanese firm that sells homegrown products like honey, praised the Dutch government for the large donation to help the nation's young people.
The greatest number of the population in South Sudan is the youth. And by empowering the youth, you are empowering the nation. We have seen our country going through many years of conflict. And this is because youth have nothing to lose. If the youth have something to lose, they will not be willing to join rebellions.
Kamil Kamaluddin, the UNDP country director for South Sudan, says his organization will focus on points of impact.
In terms of demographics, it is the youth. In terms of sector-specific interventions, it has to be private sector. And third, to start focusing on helping to cultivate self-help and self-development. Great nations are built by people who are working, not necessarily those who are waiting to receive support.
More than 70% of South Sudan's population is made up of youth, according to a report released on Wednesday by the UN's Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization, UNESCO. The report said 59% of working-age youth in South Sudan are unemployed and that vocational training could make a big difference in the lives of young people. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, advocates, political leaders, and others gather in Africa to talk about how to improve women's access to family planning. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
Tell me your favorite joke.
It's when I'm in a taxi and then a mother holds the kids, and then when a mother farts, she denies that it was not her who farted, and he starts beating the kid that is the one who farts.
The joke's about a man who had an accident and showing his teeth, and one of the drivers was saying, "Hey, kindly close your mouth. Why are you dead or not?"
I don't have a joke, but I like to listen to people when they are saying jokes. It makes me laugh and then I become happy.
My favorite joke is making stories about African celebrities. Very, very funny jokes. And trust me, people always laugh.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus. This week, hundreds of political leaders, scientists, family planning advocates, and healthcare providers are attending the International Conference on Family Planning in Kigali, Rwanda. Their shared goal is to provide 120 million more women worldwide with access to reliable contraception by 2020. To find out more, Adams Philip interviewed Simon Koch, the chief executive officer of Maristops International.
A lot of the focus will be on sub-Saharan Africa because that's where a large percentage of the unmet need is.
What is Maurice Stope's specific niche in meeting that need?
We provide subsidized or free services to people who know that contraception exists but don't necessarily have access to it or cannot afford to pay for it.
What about abortion?
We have always provided safe abortion services where we can, obviously based on legal restrictions, but we have always tried to provide women with the options where otherwise they would access unsafe services through, say, a quack doctor or backstreet. And we also do post-abortion care services, which are supporting women who've had failed abortions, who obviously then are in a state of medical emergency.
I know that many of your clients for abortion and contraception are girls and very young women. Can you tell me why?
Many women in West Africa, for example, where family size is 5-6 children, will start childbearing in their teens as adolescents, and that can have a huge long-term detrimental impact on their health. And we also know that women who have children in extreme poverty, often those children are often stunted, they don't develop properly, and having a family size which is affordable and which allows both partners to contribute to the community is really what family planning is about. It's not about just contraception, but it is planning a family effectively to maximize the impact that they can have on their own communities.
How, for example?
Family planning allows women to finish an education or to provide other options for them by spacing effectively. That option doesn't exist in many communities because the physical commodities of contraception do not exist or they're too expensive for people to access. So some women who do have occasional access don't get continuity and therefore cannot necessarily plan their families and when they have their next child.
Where are the greatest cultural challenges to family planning in Africa?
I hate to make generalizations, but I would say in West Africa and the Sahel countries, the culture is for having larger family sizes, and sometimes there is stigma about contracepting or about spacing births. Sometimes there are religious controls. People don't believe that women should take contraceptives. Sometimes it's economic. In some countries, there is a belief that the population needs to grow to support the economy. And in the end, what we focus on is choice. It's simply about what a woman wants.
I imagine you get the most resistance from men who believe that women should have as many children as they possibly can.
For every case where that is true, there are also examples of communities where the men are tremendously supportive of women and they want the same things for their families. So the best cases is where people come together and they plan their families together.
What is Maurice Stope's actual strategy on the ground?
One of the things that our organization tries to do is to take the solutions out to those communities through outreach programs. So we will promote several days in advance what we're there to do and how we're there to help. We will then turn up on the day, and women, sometimes men, will come along to those outreach camps. They will get counseling on what their needs are. They will sign consent, and then we'll provide them with usually free methods of contraception. And in those communities, it's often long-acting methods of contraception, which give them better protection for longer. For example, an IUD, an intrauterine device, or an implant. They will give protection from between 3 and 5 years for implants and up to 10 years with an intrauterine device.
What do you do to ensure that your outreach and education efforts continue to be effective for the longer term?
We often work in what we call public sector support, whereby we're doing outreach services, but together with ministries of health and local health workers who will be there in the community once we leave.
That's Simon Cook, CEO of Maristops International, which is participating in the International Family Planning Conference this week in Kigali. It has been a year since the military placed Zimbabwe's long-term leader Robert Mugabe under house arrest, ending his 37 years of rule. Reporter Hosai Zenivashi speaks to some Zimbabweans about the journey their country has taken so far.
The November coup was the climax of a bruising political battle between ZANU-PF factions jostling to succeed the aging Robert Mugabe, who was then 93 years old. Mugabe and his wife Grace sided with a youthful faction, but the army was sympathetic to former Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa. Mugabe had earlier ousted Mnangagwa and he had gone into exile, returning after the military seized control. Not long after the military acted, Obed Mpofu, the ZANU-PF Secretary for Administration, spoke.
I want to thank, on behalf of the party, our gallant fighters, who are the most disciplined army in the world. They are the most educated army in the world. And we want to thank you, comrades, for helping the masses of Zimbabwe to remove dictatorship.
Mpofu's speech strongly suggested the ruling party would chart a new way forward. The military put Mnangagwa in charge, and in July, he won the election as president. Tendai Zhou is a young Zimbabwean. He talks about what he has seen under the new government.
Since the move of President Mugabe, there hasn't been much change, really. The changes that are there are very minute, such that we can't really term them changes. Mnangagwa has been trying to project an image of being a different person than Robert Mugabe, but in actual fact, they are more or less the same.
Zhou says there is little more room for free speech, but that the shooting deaths of protesters after the elections show not much has changed. The anniversary received only modest attention in Zimbabwe's media, where more coverage is devoted to economic issues. Since taking office, Mnangagwa has promised a new era for Zimbabwe, one where the country will be open for economic investment and one where free expression is respected. Melinda Mlambo is an entrepreneur.
The only thing that's actually really changed has been the leadership and the face to the government or the face to the system. But we still have the system in place. We've just been given a platform where everything is sugar-coated. It hasn't changed whatsoever.
Over the past year, the government has tried to be more transparent and made several promises about economic progress. However, inflation is on the rise, the economy remains weak, the shortage of hard currency has gotten worse, and unemployment hasn't improved much. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zvinavashe from Harare.
From Harare, we move to Kampala for some sports news. South Sudan's under-23 soccer team lost to Ugandan team after giving up a late goal in the 2019 African Cup of Nations qualifier match in Kampala yesterday. The young bright stars say they believe a one-goal margin shows they can come out on the top when they meet with the Ugandans once again in Juba next week. Mungume Davis Rokarinj reports for VOA from Kampala.
Hundreds of South Sudanese, mainly students who study in Uganda, were cheering on their junior team against Uganda's Cobs throughout the match. The Ugandans dominated for most of the game, but the young bright stars played good defense and at times counter-attacked. The first half ended in a goalless draw. With the official 90 minutes of the game already played, South Sudanese goalkeeper Ramadan John Mike Ding fouled Uganda's striker Stephen Mukwala, giving the Ugandans a penalty kick. Ugandan left-back Chiza Mustafa scored the only goal in the 1-0 match. South Sudan coach Simon James Tiwani blames the loss on his goalkeeper's inexperience.
Also, this is a football like that, my friend. You win, you lose, or you draw. So you don't have experience in the last minutes, you can you lose the match. This is experience with a goalkeeper. This is a football like that. You can get the score in the first minute, where you can lose it in the last minute.
And when he says five members of his squad could not make it to Kampala because they had not obtained passports in time for the match. Players must produce passports or national identity cards as proof of nationality before they play in an international game. When he says his team will resume training tomorrow to be well prepared for the next match at home. 20-year-old team captain John Colchol says the home team advantage counts for a lot.
When we get home there, I believe that we can do something, you know. We must make our people proud. So we are prepared for it. And I believe that the citizen that will get there, they will give us enough support.
Colchol plays professionally for the Kenyan First Division side, the Kariobangi Sharks Football Club. Ugandan player Tiza Mustafa says he was surprised to see how much the Young Bright Stars had improved since the last time he played against them.
We expected that the South Sudan team was weak and we thought we could give them like 5 goals. But we won 1-0, so it's a great result for us. We'll go there and do our best to see that we qualify.
South Sudanese fan James Ayum Malwal says despite the loss, he's proud of his team.
My players, they play well. Just only the mistake at the last minute where they caused penalty. And I'm very sure in the second legs, they will win.
The aggregate winner of both legs will play Tunisia in the second round. For VOA News, Ayam Mugume, Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
That report by Mungume from Kampala brings us to the end of our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Longonyo by Colonel Mido. By the way, I have to tell you what Longonyo means. It means someone who hates spending money or who is stingy.
Sabi Guru shuta kide ma bodita fisa mae Saidu masakine Saidu akwana kulue Saidu masakine Saidu akwana kulue Guru shuta kide ma bido funita ya sabi Shutaki de mabodita fisa mae Saidu masakine Saidu akwana kulue Saidu masakine Hey yakwana Aino takumlo kuluku Makalam gurush rasto biga kebir Makalam gurush biga mabiseli munasfisika Aba halkulu makalam gurush Guluku, Sokolongonyo ladi jwa kenisa, Budi guru shuya. Ah, lo guluku, guru shuma bido funita. Eta bisibu guru jde kulu fi dunia.
We have been listening to Mido Samuel with the song Longonyo. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. We hope to see you back here again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Hello, Guruku. Soko Longonyo Biga Ziada. Ida Zeridia Ziada. Jena Kanayan Bijua. Goma Bishin Fumusteswa. Quelle body fisi Italia Asan Gurusto Guaja Canfibica E lo gulukuma body gurusia jama E sokolo manyo biga siada Edemi do dedi Masupa Mazembe Alane Jesse.